Today on The Breakdown, we've got it all. Michael Adamo has returned, finally, and he's not the only one. We have all your favorites here this time. I mean, joining us on the show, Doug Pohl, Dan Negreanu, Jason Kuhn, they're all here. Well, in spirit, conceptually, because aren't we all everywhere? Our atoms are not just part of us, our corporeal form, correct? They travel. They're just grouped loosely together in this plastic bag we call a body. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, back to my point. Michael Adamo playing in a $150,000 buy-in event, Triton event, my babies. And first place is $4.2 million. We're three off the money. And fireworks, not surprisingly, will ensue. You're going to be like, it's like the 4th of July up in here or something, you know, depending on what country you're in. whatever reason you'd shoot off some fireworks. But kids, stay safe, okay? Those things can blow your fingers off. On The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
You're thinking of Bastille Day. Bastille Day. Is when the fireworks. Yeah.
That's Canadian, right?
Yeah. I think, well, probably some of Canada, maybe French Canada. This might be offensive to French Canadians because I know they're like, aren't they notably, you know, just kind of like grumpy about everything? Isn't that a thing with French Canadians?
Super grumpy, yes.
Yeah.
Super, super grumpy. They're like, my toast is not French with my fucking cafe, you know? And it's like, shut up.
To quote Jonathan Levy, my toast is not French with my fucking cafe. That's a Quebecois. That's a Quebecois right there.
It's
what they sound like.
It's rough. It's rough to be there, and it's rough to be in those restaurants when these things are happening. Truth.
I know Michael Adamo is Australian, but I could see him being French Canadian. He's got the look. He's got the French Canadian look.
Hardcore. He'd be like out there every day from 3 to 6, you know, Monday to Friday, curling with the boys, you know, if he could.
I don't know if the French Canadians are known for their curling, but this might also be offensive to French Canadians. But guess what? We're going all in, to use a poker term. Against French Canada. We haven't done it before. We've taken on Australia. We've taken on Italy. I'm sure there's other countries we've insulted deeply.
We've
never gone after the sub-region of Canada where the Frenchmen live.
Let's be honest. There's a reason why, and it's we've been afraid to. It's a bridge too far. We've been told so many times. Joe Rogan won't touch that third rail, but we are here.
I get the sense that they're mean, you know? Like, I'm concerned that they're going to be mean to me and hurt my feelings.
They are going to be mean no matter what you do, though. It doesn't matter. The sense of superiority already, like, emanating off any French Canadian is... It wafts.
I don't know if I've even met a French Canadian. I mean, isn't Jonathan Duhamel French Canadian?
Could be. I don't know.
Yeah, I think he is. And he seems really nice.
He does seem really nice, but give him an espresso at 3 a.m. with a fucking baguette, and it all comes out. The knives come out. You've never been to Montreal, though? That's what you're saying?
Montreal. It's called Montreal.
Montreal. That's how they say it. I understand. You've never been there?
Yeah. No, I've never been to anywhere on the eastern coast of Canada. I've been only to British Columbia. In Canada.
Fun fact. So Grant was born and raised in Illinois and then came out to Oregon for college. And those are the only two states, notwithstanding airports for connections, you've ever actually been in. And of course, Nevada for the poker. But those are the only three states you've ever actually been in. Is that correct? Yeah.
Of course.
Have you been traveling since I've last seen you?
That's such a weird lie.
It's a Darwin Moon reference. Come on.
I'm doing deep
poker fucking references here. Where are you?
Why would people be thinking it was a Darwin Moon reference? That's a weird thing.
I can't believe you. Anytime Darwin Moon comes up, what's the first thing you say?
I say, remember that hand against Billy Kopp? Remember that one?
that is the first thing you say. Flush over flush with the bird pair. Who can check? Bet. bet, race, shove, call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Billy Cobb has the lowest, worst. Oh, man. Anyway, we did that hit, actually.
Yeah.
The other, it's been a while. Then the second thing you say is Darvin Ham had never left the state of Tennessee or whatever, right?
I think Darvin Ham has left the state of Tennessee. He was
Darvin Moon
coaching the Los Angeles Lakers until very recently.
Remotely. He was doing it remotely, yeah, though. Because
That. I didn't really watch that much regular season basketball, you know. So
nobody wants to work, you know, Grant. Darvin Ham, right?
Damn kids these days.
Yeah. They're remote work.
Yeah, so it has been a while since we did a Michael Adamo hand, hasn't it? I feel like we were doing like two per month for a couple months, and now we're on a big hiatus, and now we're back.
Well, I mean, he had been running over the poker world for like a year, and we did a lot of really incredible hands of his, and now we haven't really heard it from him in quite a while. He hasn't had any big scores, and no one suggested any hands, and those things probably go hand in hand, right? When he has big scores, some of his crazy plays work, and we're more apt to get suggestions and have them work. You know, it's more cool to talk about.
So do you think he is no longer on track to become the tournament GOAT, which it felt like for a little while he was going to be that?
I always thought you were being optimistic about his prospects to be a GOAT because, you know, it is a bit of a Grant-ism to see a young upstart showing up. And
dude,
then, you know, you love to project how good they're going to, what it's all going to mean. And, you know, you're a little optimistic.
Whatever, way to blow your nose on camera, by the way. Way to blow your nose on camera, by the way. We're recording video right now, just so you know.
I forgot about the camera.
Yeah, that's up. We're leaving it.
Hold on,
we're keeping it.
Let me get the hair right if we're on camera.
Oh, no, you look great. Don't worry about it.
I had to move the hair just a little bit. I look excellent.
See, that's good TV. That's why people tune in for that type of thing.
I honestly think can we mark that? The me blowing my nose and not realizing my camera that you're talking about is like potentially viral and something we should consider.
Okay. All right. I let it sit for a while you had to make your little joke about me being too optimistic about young talent.
You did.
Because this is like from a private conversation that we had where we were talking about NBA players and you were like, you're always too optimistic. And then you tried to list examples and you couldn't do it. You just couldn't do it.
I did list many examples.
Such as Anthony Edwards?
They were all guys who turned out really well, pretty much. Except for like two guys. Yeah, I was like, oh, you really like Luka Doncic. Remember that? And Anthony Edwards, you talked him up a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, yeah. What a deal. Oh, Grant, top three picks in the draft. He's saying how good they are going to be. And he's right sometimes. What a prognosticator. This guy's Nostradamus.
Anyway, I don't think I was particularly high on Adamo in the past either compared to you. We were just like, he was on one of those runs and it felt like a special run. It felt more special than like a Sam Greenwood run or Ike Haxton run that happened a little bit after him. You know?
I'm just saying you're the guy who suddenly is an interesting word, but you brought up this, is he on track to be the GOAT? And then we had to have that discussion. You forced us to have it publicly.
I mean,
you know?
This is the type of shit that people want to hear, and we're trying to make a podcast that people listen to.
Oh,
maybe
so
you should take a lesson.
Now? We pander?
Yeah, yeah, we
Hold
pander.
On, I got to blow my nose again on camera. I'll be right back.
Stop doing that.
That's what the people want.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I want to see people not realizing they're on camera do things when they think they're off camera.
I mean,
that's
obviously a good genre of video to watch. Is people not realizing they're mic'd up or on camera. That's the best. That's good stuff.
How many times did you watch that Jeffrey Toobin clip?
I mean, you know, I watch it all the time, man. Is that actually a public clip? I don't think it's public. I think he was just on a video call with colleagues.
I think it was a work call, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's funny the idea of it being, you know, just out there in the world.
YouTube, Jeffrey Toobin.
at least he has a chance to survive it because the clip doesn't exist in the world, like for the public to see.
I don't feel like he survived it. I think he's done, right?
I don't mean survive it locally, like now. I mean, you know, in another lifetime, survive it. No, like in, locally. 5-10 years from now, he might get some job, you know, somewhere news adjacent.
Yeah.
Where, like, if that video was public, like, was actually streamed out, like, no chance. you know.
Yeah.
Even though it's all, even though the act is the same and the knowledge, the public knowledge of it is pretty much the same, although being able to look at it anytime you want and be able to, you know, share it virally keeps it a little more in your face, I guess.
But I think seeing stuff like that would make it worse for the person who was the perpetrator of doing it. I think it's just got to be worse.
I mean, Ray Rice much? You know, I mean.
No, I don't. Thanks.
Good. That's good.
Yeah.
But like Ray Rice went from being like, it was a bit of a thing, you know, domestic violence was something they have that happens in the NFL a fair amount, to the video came out and he never worked again. Everyone else always came back and worked. The teams knew what was going on every time with all their players. They didn't care. But as soon as the public saw that, it was over for that dude, right? No one could take it. Ah, oh my God. What was that, Grant? What did you just do?
I drank some water and it went and? Down the wrong pipe. So I had to do a cough.
Okay, I thought you hawked a loogie off camera, like
I onto the ground in my house. No, I didn't do that.
That's you, uncivilized Grant. See, finally, the people are gonna get to see all the shit that you're doing. That's disgusting. Because they don't know. They assume you're a clean, put together guy. Because you're faking it. You know, you're showing it. You're again pandering. Quite frankly, pandering. And I'm real. Yep. I'm gritty. I'm dirty. I'm real. I'm not hawking loogies though on my carpet.
Yeah, they call me they call me the evolution of Tubin, the next generation.
Nice. That's,
yeah,
that's what you want. That's what you, you know. There's people get paid good money for that too. You should at least charge somebody.
You know what? I'm considering it. Considering that my podcast partner is so unprofessional that he's blowing his nose and he's got some sort of closet in the background. Who knows what's in that thing? Nobody knows what's in that thing.
I didn't think
what's
we were
in the
supposed...
closet?
I really didn't think we were doing video today. This is just remote, so we always look like this. I didn't know we were really going to release this as a video. It seems like we are, and it's a problem. I would have changed the whole shot. I would not do it in this room. This is a very casual setup for me. I would never have this image, this picture in here. It's terrible. It's
yes, you
good.
Would.
That closet
yes,
is
would.
Awful behind me. Awful.
So
I can't
all
have
the
a
listeners
white background.
Are. All the listeners are loving this, by the way. Who
they're
don't
loving it. They don't
have
need to
video.
See it. All the podcast people are fine. Don't worry
yeah,
about them.
Yeah, that's true.
They're,
they don't see the hand play out. They don't see it play out. We tell them what happens.
It's
hey,
the
but
same
guess
thing
what?
Here.
If you are listening without video and you struggle with like the board and remembering what the hands are and stuff like that, this is a good place for you to consider using the video at times when you're not driving and stuff, because we actually are putting the board up and it's going to be there consistently. So
or. Cool. Or
do it while you're
driving.
Yeah,
I mean,
good idea. Wait, no, yeah, like really good. You think because you're in Puerto Rico now, you have no liability? You can just say whatever you want. It's a U.S.
I mean,
territory.
I do feel that way. It's unincorporated.
Okay,
it's not exactly the same. Are we going to sit here and pretend people aren't watching YouTube videos while they're driving? Is that what we're doing now? Oh, we're just lords of the manor who don't even watch YouTube while we drive on the highway. Apparently,
yeah. No, I watch Tubi, actually. I don't watch YouTube. I watch Tubi because doesn't Walmart own that? I'm a big Walton fan. Anyway, let's just get to the hand.
Okay.
Let's do it now.
Fine.
This is a big tournament. It's $150,000 buy-in with $9,000 in rake that Triton is doing.
Grant is so upset about this rake.
I'm not upset about the rake. I'm amazed by the rake. I know that as a percentage from what a tournament player should expect, it's a good percentage. You know, if you went to the World Series and you were getting that type of percentage, you'd be very happy. But the absolute value of the money versus the labor needed for the tournament to be a higher buy-in just makes it such a good money printing service for Triton. Like, what a deal. What a deal to get to pay. Like,
so do
so
you
cool.
think, do you think online poker... cash games should charge the same rake no matter the stakes?
No, because they want to make money. Like I
well, what's the difference between them and Triton?
No,
doesn't
I'm not
want to make money.
I'm not saying Triton shouldn't do it. I'm just like kind of amazed that this is the poker economy that we live in and we've all grown to accept it, you know. And I think if it had been standardized early on in online poker, that the online sites were like, hey, guess what, our competitive advantage is we charge the same rake for all the stakes because we know that it doesn't take any more data center usage or anything like that. It doesn't cost us any extra to spread higher stakes. So what's the difference to us? We are the good site that does that because we don't screw over the consumer. If one of the sites had done that, it would probably be the standard.
I mean, Full Tilt Poker, and I think this is true for all of them. All of them have maxes on how much they'll take out. So actually, effectively, this sort of is true for online poker cash games, right? It's just as if you're talking about 1 cent, 2 cent poker versus, you know, the expensive cash game poker online. Like the 1 cent, 2 cent, they're going to rake, you know, 2 cents out of the $4 pot or whatever they're doing. But I remember back in the day when on Full Tilt, when like Phil Ivey would be playing someone heads up and watching these hands, and they would literally play a $300,000 pot and it would be a $3 rake because that's what Full Tilt was capped out at. It was just a max $3 rake no matter, you know. And so it was just so funny to see that and pretty incredible, actually.
It is incredible. But I mean, to be fair, there's any hand that happens in live poker that's that size either is on a stream that's unraked or it's in a timed game. So it's like not like the pot is getting raked.
That is true. But the timed games, as you get bigger, you get more expensive.
Right, but they're not for a 200, 400 game, they're not like every half hour is $1,000. They're not doing that type of shit.
Right, right. But it's more than like $20 every half hour.
I don't know. I've never played 200, 400, and I never will.
Well, now who's limiting himself? Jeffrey?
2.0. 2.0. Please just call me 2.0 as shorthand. That would be my preference.
Jeffrey 2.0. It's actually even like sounds a little bit like 2-bit. It's great. Hey, we're doing perfect. Tubin humor. This is incredible. No one's doing this.
It's only like 3 years too late for it to be topical. It's not a big deal.
Or it was too soon, and now it's perfect. Think about it.
Yeah. It's like that. It's finally open for comedy. It's like one of those national tragedies that you have to wait a certain amount of time.
Okay, one more thing. We're really going to get to the hand, but one more
thing. Are we? Are we?
I'm just promising the audience things. Okay. It's not my problem. You're the panderer. I just talk. Look how upset he gets. See how you get to see it when he has that silent reaction in the face.
I was doing
that.
Rewind
that.
I was playing that up for the audience. Now that I am aware of the video, I'm gonna like show how you're supposed to feel when Jonathan talks. You know, if people need a visual cue on the way Jonathan is making them feel inside, I'll show them the way that most people would feel when Jonathan talks.
You make those faces back when we're just doing the podcast, is all I'm saying. So when there are no cameras. Oh, this is what it was. So there was the roast of Tom Brady on Netflix a few days ago, which is very popular. I'm sure most of our audience at least saw that it happened if they didn't watch it. And within that, there were apparently a lot of Aaron Hernandez is a murderer jokes, right?
I heard it was off-color. I heard it was off-color, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a roast. It's supposed to be like that, right? That's the deal.
Sure.
So the family of Aaron Hernandez, like, released a statement saying, like, they were upset by the fact that there were jokes about Aaron Hernandez being a murderer, which I have to say feels like the wrong people to be upset about Aaron Hernandez being a murderer. talking about maybe the families of the people who were killed.
Right.
Those people maybe could be upset about it. But like the people, it's like, oh no, the whole world is mentioning that Aaron Hernandez really was this horrible, horrible person. Like seems very much okay. It was very odd to me. So anyway, this just goes back to that, what we were just saying. Somehow,
it totally does. It's totally related to everything.
It does. If you rewind, you will see it does relate. But I don't know how. Back to the hand. To the hand.
150K buy-in, 9K rake, unrelated to the play. But it is a big tournament. First place is $4.2 million. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot
of Tritons,
chicken.
They just keep rolling.
Yep.
It is a lot of chicken. Michael Adamo is back. He's fourth in chips in the tournament. This is important because there are 23 players remaining and 20 get paid. And Adamo is fourth in chips with 1.5 million at the 25K big blind level. He's going to open ace queen of hearts under the gun to 50K min open. No problems here.
Of course not.
Santosh Suvarna, who has made a name for himself in high stakes poker recently. He's been on the most recent season of high stakes poker as sort of just like the chillest, calmest dude ever to lose millions and win millions of dollars, just doesn't care. It's pretty sweet. He's got 1.1 million in front of him. He's got two sixes, and he's going to call from the cutoff. Do you have any preference for another action here, a fold or a three bet?
I don't think so. I think mostly I like it. We're deep enough that we can absolutely call. It's completely fine, right? We're getting more than enough odds. We're in position. Adamo's a psycho. So, you know, this is the kind of hand that mostly wants to call. You know, sure, we could three bet sometimes too. I would never fold this hand. I mostly just want to put in two blinds and get on with my life. What do you think?
With the caveat of, I don't know, at this stage in the tournament with three to the money, maybe it's okay, but like, I would be concerned about if there's like any 12 to 20 blind stacks behind me.
Yeah, that's true.
But they're a lot less likely to shove right now. It's like a much easier fold, honestly, right now because their range is tighter if they do shove.
I mean, a 12 blind stack, we probably have to call if Adamo folds. Like, we're
I don't know, it depends
action.
On
got a pair.
How,
I think
it depends
calling.
On how we assess their range. If Adamo folds and it's like 10 more blinds to us, if we really think they have like ace, king, and big pairs only, which is quite possible in a 150K buy-in with three left to the money, you know, it's sixes might be doing poorly enough against the range that we could actually fold.
I mean, it's unlikely that they would be that tight, but I guess if we really believe that, fair enough. But if they can't have ace, queen, and they can't have other stuff, like, also remember this too, if it's a 12 blind stack, I mean, 20 and 12 is really different here, right? If it's a 12 blind stack, we're getting almost 2-1 to call. You know, there's going to be 18 in there, and it's going to be 10 to call.
All right.
That's really different than a 20 blind stack. So anyway,
thought experiment.
Whatever.
Thought experiment. Good. All right. So the kid with the hoodie and the headphones who seems really good and opens a lot of hands, opens under the gun, and right. You're on the bubble of a typical $1,000 tournament that you might play Jonathan Levy, and you're in the cutoff.
Yeah.
With Santosh's blind stack effective and sixes, and then the button with 12 blinds shoves, who seems just like a typical regular who's very aware of the bubble. Are you... Well, actually, I'm going to reverse this.
Okay.
As the button with 12 blinds, what hands are you shoving?
Great.
What hands are you shoving?
With 12 blinds, I'm shoving nines plus for sure.
Even when the open is under the gun?
He's this cool kid who's probably opening a lot and is probably pretty wide. I got 12 blinds. Yeah, I'm shoving. We're not like
bubble.
On the bubble. We're three away. We're three away from the money. It's going to be
okay,
a long
fine.
Time. It's going to be a long
All
time.
Right.
If we're right on the bubble, it's really different, I think, than being three away from the money. Don't you?
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I blew up your different. Whole thought experiment with that, right? Because you were sort of thinking of it as being right on the bubble. But we're not right on the bubble. Like, with 23 players left, it's probably going to be like an hour and a half before we actually burst the bubble.
Maybe.
Most of the time. Sometimes not.
I guess that is, it is different, but it's not like, it's not an unnotable thing, though.
Yeah. But I just feel like, I mean, look, I'm assuming Adamo's probably opening a lot. He's Michael fucking Adamo.
Yeah.
I would think ace queen for 12 blinds is an easy shove. I would think ace jack probably shoving 12 blinds, especially three off the money. You know, sorry, not three off the money, but three off the bubble. I think it's probably a pretty easy shove too. Certainly ace jack suited. King queen suited, we could consider. I don't know what we're doing with the ace 10, but if we feel like he's opening enough, we should be shoving those hands too. I think now we're shoving all the way down to sevens at least.
Sounds
kind of
shitty.
There's a lot of stuff there. What?
All right, let's change it two different ways.
Okay.
First way is it's the actual bubble.
Great.
How do you?
That changes it.
So are you going with nines now?
Adamo opens. If he's opening every hand, absolutely.
Let's say
he's
not
opening every hand.
Let's say he's not opening every hand.
I assume, I would guess, and maybe, and this is important, is he opening like 70% of hands though, or is he just opening more, feels like more like a normal range?
All right,
really
let's
matters.
Change it in the other way that I wanted
okay.
to, which is it's not Adamo anymore, it's just some normal dude who's under the gun.
Okay, and he's not opening a lot. He's just, everything's normal. So I'm just up against his more or less under the gun range. He's not like abusing the bubble or anything.
Maybe he's a little wider because he's a big stack or something, but he's not
a
like
little.
Crazy wide.
But I'm not like, geez, this guy. I think I fold nines then with 12 blinds, assuming I care about this min cash, right? Right.
I mean, that's
like
I don't. What? I really don't like it when you use caveats like that. The assuming I care about this min cash.
I think a lot of players are playing. Like, there's two different ways to play in this spot, right? One is to try and win the tournament, and the other one is to try and protect your equity, your dollar equity here, right? Those are different things.
Yes, but look, I think from an instructional perspective, it's not very useful to talk about it from like a what your life role is thing, unless we're actually talking about bankroll management, which if you're considering bankroll management while you're already on the bubble of a tournament, then you fucked up.
Let me say it this way. Most pros at this point, most like high-end pros even, play really carefully around here because they really value the min cash.
Like, it's not because of the cash itself. It's because of the expected value of the situation. It's the highest leverage situation until the final table.
I understand that. I understand. When I say value the min cash, I don't mean they want to be able to go home and say, oh, I cashed versus I didn't. I mean, they're saying they've done the math and they think the money's a little better this way. I think it's often a mistake not to try and win the tournament and put yourself in positions to win the tournament versus as you get shorter and shorter in these spots, you can put yourself in positions where it's almost impossible to win the tournament. Because I've watched like really big pros. I remember doing this actually on the day two of the Millionaire Maker. It was early in the day, and like we started day two, and we were not in the money yet, but we were like, it was clear we were going to be in the money really soon. I think we played four hands and we got in the money. And this one guy who was like a relatively big pro, like very impressive Hendon, millions and millions of dollars in Hendon, was at my table, and he had like 11 blinds, and he tanked every hand and made it clear to the table he was folding every hand no matter what, right? For the min cash and the Millionaire Maker. And I'm like thinking, I don't know, man, like that doesn't seem like the right strategy to me. You know, like I just don't understand why we would do that versus like looking for a good spot, understanding there's a gamble here, understanding sometimes we don't make the $2,000 or $3,000, but we actually now have a chance to win $1 million versus almost no chance to win $1 million, right? I mean, we give ourselves, I understand we're not doubling our chances, but we give ourselves more of a chance. And I feel like, especially if we're good and we're skilled, it means as we get deeper in the tournament with chips, we're going to be more likely to pull that off versus less likely. So I think it really does affect people. And I think it often affects people suboptimally, even though I understand there's a whole EV calculation here. So maybe I'm wrong about this, but it looks and feels wrong to me a lot. I feel like people tighten up too much here.
Yeah, I think there's like some missing pieces to the EV calculation, not mathematically, just from a, like if you're an actual professional poker player or a very serious regular who has poker as a piece of their income, there are different ways to approach it. And I do think that the pure ICM EV calculation does support, you know, folding a lot in that type of spot. Yeah. But from the perspective of like the way your life is going as a poker player, there are different ways to look at it. And this comes to me because the most recent tournament series I traveled for, I did the most like squeaky bubble thing ever. Cause I was trying to, I did many squeaky bubble things when I was a short stack on the stone bubble of like a tournament that had like a 23 player bubble or whatever.
When you say squeaky, you mean like you were really tight on the bubble?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Like stuff that was correct, but like from an EV perspective, but I just fucking hated it so much. Yeah, it was so awful. And I recognized after that, and I did end up stone bubbling anyway. This is not a results oriented thing, but I realized after it that like that's just not how I'm interested in playing. I don't want to do that, right? Like, because yeah. My bankroll management comes from my game selection, right? I'm not going to buy into a tournament where it's too much, where I can't afford to not cash. I'm not going to do that. So I've already established my bankroll management situation. I have a good base layer of money coming in from playing cash game poker, and not everybody does that. Some people just play tournaments. But the way I look at it is, if you're going to have a good combination of cash and tournaments, cash is like your income that's always kind of coming in. Of course, there's down months and stuff like that. But tournaments are your asymmetric bets where you're really trying to just like blast the bankroll into the universe, not where you're just trying to eke out a little bit of like a 4% more EV situation. Because yeah. I'd prefer the 4% less EV with the asymmetric bet of the huge win. Now, right. I don't know how that goes in a 150K tournament, though. That's a little different, right? I've never played in a 150K tournament.
For you, it would be different because 150K is different. But for these guys, a lot of them, maybe not Adamo, but for like Santosh, I don't know that it is different. You know,
yeah, for Santosh, I think you're right. But for the pros, I think there is a point where it's like no longer within the realm of normal bankroll management, even though they're supposed to be doing that properly. They obviously have backers and they have these situations going on, but
right.
It's a different financial calculation than when you're buying into 1Ks and $1,500 tournaments as your like usual highest buy-in tournament.
I don't know if it actually is a different financial calculation, but I mean, I think like the pros, assuming Adamo's back, than most of these guys are, like they're thinking about like makeup versus not makeup stuff, right? So it's like, oh, if I get even the min cash, it's instead of being 159K more in makeup, I'm, you know, 150K less in makeup. Like, that's a big difference, which means the next tournament I play, maybe I'm actually playing for something instead of just for my backers to like have for me to owe them less money. Like, these are all extra pieces. So I just want to come back to something. You often critique me for saying, like, you know, it depends on what you're trying to do here. But even what you just said, like, your personal money philosophy does affect things, and it's important to acknowledge that. And I agree with you.
I recognize it.
I want to play like you play on the bubble, or like you're saying you want to play. Like, that's better. I prefer that. I don't know that I would do that if I was in the one drop, you know, we're little right. Stone bubble. I think I'm going to be crazy tight, and they're going to push me around. It's going to work, you know. It's $1 million bubble. You got me, man. Like, if I can fall my way to $1 million, it's going to be hard not to.
You're going to beat Tobias Rankemeyer.
I mean, I'm not going to fold aces there because that's absurd, but I'm going to beat Tobias Rankemeyer there. Yeah. So bring it all back. What do you do? I think it really does depend on like how you're approaching this. A lot of pros are going to make that fold because of this very slight EV calculation. I'm saying, like, I don't think I would do that. And I question if it's even right to pass the EV, like you're saying, partially because of just how I want to live my life, but more so because now that I have chips and I'm further in the tournament, if I have an edge on the field, those chips are worth more to me. Right.
No, yeah, I agree. And so I think it was a bit of an erroneous accusation of me to say that that was an example of you doing that. I think those examples that are more egregious are in cash games where it should not matter at all ever, essentially. Like, right. Either you're doing proper bankroll management or you're not in the cash game, and your decisions should not be affected by that.
Yep. Agreed.
But I can understand how in a tournament there's kind of like a forking paths thing of what you're interested in from the tournament. As like a subset of what you do in poker.
Yeah. Like, Eric Lindgren is always interested. He used to be, I mean, I don't know if he's interested in anything anymore, but was always interested in like winning the tournament. Like, that was always his goal. And I think almost all of his decisions were about, is this going to help me to win the tournament? Not like some other goal along the way. Right. And he was very successful in tournament poker. I mean, not successful in a lot of other things, but
yeah, other things, there were problems. There were problems in other things. But not to discount the idea that we should be wary of other people's ranges in changing in situations, right? Like, we probably don't want to shove nines on the button if the person who opened under the gun has 20 blinds and is a tight player and it's near the bubble, right? Like, we don't want to do stuff like that.
But if it's someone who's abusing the bubble, I think, you know, we're happy to shove nines, even with 10 blinds or 9 blinds. Like, I'm way out of your range. Call if you want. Like, let's go. Like, that's that. Right?
All right. Let's actually get to the hand. This has been
great idea.
A long turn. So Santosh called with sixes. That's where we are. Adamo opened under the gun.
Santosh called. Still doing pre-flop.
Yeah. So let's keep it moving. Santosh called with sixes. He's got 1.1 million. So just over 40 bigs. So as I said, Adamo is fourth in chips with his 1.5 million. Wang Yi, who's in the big blind, is the chip leader with 3.4 million in chips. So this is important. This is meaningful and has ace king. I did not write down what the ace king was, but I believe it's ace of X, king of diamonds, and that matters. Ace of X, king of diamonds for Wang Yi. I will find the actual thing. It's going to be on the screen if you're watching it. His actual hand will be on the screen right now, so you'll know what the ace is. He's going to 3-bet to 250K.
And I've looked up ace of spades, king of diamonds.
Okay. Ace of spades, king of diamonds. And I've looked him up, and before this tournament, he had like 700K in Hendon, and he's playing a lot of high rollers. So he's not crushing it so far in poker.
Okay.
At least in tournament poker. Maybe he's a cash guy. We don't really know.
Yeah, probably he is.
So he makes it 250 from the big blind, and this is like immediately just a shitty spot for Adamo, who opened under the gun with ace queen of hearts and is fourth in chips. When the like, it's a really good position at the table in that Adamo is directly to the left of the big stack with the bubble approaching, with the fourth stack. But this is the type of spot that tournament players fear, right? Where you have a big stack, but the bigger stack is there and the bubble is approaching.
Yeah.
So what is your general approach in Adamo's spot here with Wang just made it a sixth of Adamo's stack total to continue?
Well, I'm the commentators were saying they thought Adamo was going to fold or shove, basically, or fold or re-raise. But a re-raise is essentially a shove, right?
I mean, if you can get pretty straightforward information by making it 700K, you could probably fold. That seems wrong. I don't know.
I mean, how much do we have as Adamo in our stack?
1.5.
We're going to put in half our stack and fold ace-queen suited? I mean, let's not do that. If we're going to do that, let's have ace four suited, for crying out loud. Let's not have an actual hand that could be best.
Right. I don't really see three betting as a good option here. Or four betting, excuse me.
Right. I think four betting turns our hand essentially into a bluff. Like, we're folding out all the worst hands.
Yeah.
Ace jack is folding, ace king isn't. So that's not great. We may get some small pairs to fold if they're squeezing in the first place, which I don't know if they are or not. Like, if this guy's been squeezing a lot, okay, I guess you could talk yourself into a shove. But, you know, like, are nines going to fold? I don't know. Are tens going to fold? I don't know. Is he doing this with nines and tens? I don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. The only evidence we have as Grant and Jonathan is that he did it with ace-king, which is, like, within the normal range of doing it.
So I don't like the idea of four betting at all here, unless this guy's squeezing a lot. If this guy's squeezing a lot, fine. We can four bet and just pick up all the chips and not have to think about it. That's fine. And we run into it. But assuming that's not the case, I hate the idea of four betting. I think it's a huge mistake. I think this hand is a perfect calling hand, even though, as you said, it's sort of a nightmare. We're putting in a reasonable amount of our chips right now. That sort of sucks. But we still actually have some chips back, right? It's a quarter million we're putting in, but we still have, 1.25 million. And we have the kind of hand that plays relatively straightforward post-flop, right? Like, we flop top pair, we're just not going to fold it, almost certainly, right? Like, and the stack-to-pot ratio is going to be good for making a top pair hand. Like, it all fits together pretty well. The fact that it's suited makes it even prettier. This feels like exactly the hand to call with. Like, there aren't that many hands you would just call with here based on the stack size and the fact we're getting close to the bubble. This is one of them, I think. Isn't this the perfect calling hand?
It's pretty good. Depending on what we think of Wang Yi, we could call with hands like aces and kings, too, with the intention of getting it in on the flop.
Yeah, fair enough. That's not a bad point. But that's a hand that we have all options with, right? Like,
yeah.
But like the hand that's like just 100% pure call feels like ace, queen of hearts. Like, like, why would you?
Yeah.
You can't really fold this hand. That's absurd. We can't really four bet it profitably unless this guy's squeezing at a high frequency. So it's like a kind of a perfect call.
I agree. It feels like a call to me, and that's what Adamo does. So I guess we're justified because Michael Adamo did it, and he's the greatest of all time.
Right.
Santosh folds his sixes, and we're heading to the flop with 585K in the pot.
Okay.
The flop is a nothing for these guys. It's four of hearts, five of diamonds, eight of diamonds. And immediately as Adamo, you're like, well, that's too bad that I just lost 1/6 of my stack. That's really just a shame. Until Wang Yi bets 100K into 585. There's a heart out there. There's backdoor wheel.
Oh, yeah. We're in position.
We can't fold for 100K.
No. We have to call 100K. If he bets, what number are we folding for?
250, I think we fold.
Oh, easy. I think probably even 200 we might have to fold just because we're really running out of chips here, right? Stack to pot's going to be like 1-1. Even if we turn a heart, what are we doing? We're going to need him to check. Turning a heart alone isn't good enough. It's like turn a heart and he has to give up, right? Which he's probably not doing with overpairs, which means we might, you know, we don't really need to turn a heart. Turning a heart doesn't, I guess it just gives us equity when called. But there's not going to be room really to semi-bluff unless he checks.
I mean, there's some bad things with even the 100K. If we call and a heart turns and he's like the type of guy who's going to go pot on the turn.
A lot of guys are.
Yeah, then it's not good enough. But
right,
I don't know. 100K is probably small enough that we can call because like the odds are just so good for him to check the turn when those things happen. You know, it's okay.
I mean, there's like 29 blinds in there and it's four blinds to call. I think it's a pretty straightforward call. Like we're in position, we're Michael Adamo, we got the backdoor nut draw. Let's go. We're calling. Right.
What do you think about the bet?
It is weird how small it is. I don't know what we're accomplishing with this bet because hands like this are going to call with this bet, right? So the only thing we get to accomplish is we get to sort of keep our options open and continue betting on the turn, right? That's what it does for us.
I think Adamo would have folded without the backdoor, though.
You think he's folding ace queen off for four into 29? I don't know.
I think he is. I think he is. I mean, unless the guy's got a rep, I think, like, you need to have some backdoor equity, I think, even for 100K.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think we're just getting a crazy price, and we're in position. We get to see what he does for four blinds. I think I'm just hanging around and seeing what he does. Like we said, the heart is often not that useful anyway to hit, because if he bets big on the turn, it doesn't matter. We're not going to be able to do anything with that heart.
All right, so what's the amount you think Wang needs
for that to be useful? Yeah.
What do you think the amount is Wang needs to bet for ace queen no backdoor to fold?
I think 200K has to fold, right?
What's the lowest amount? Can you go lower?
Yeah, I know. I'm working my way there. 175. I think we have to fold for 175.
I think we can get away with 150. I mean, 150? I was thinking 100 might work, so I think 150.
Okay. I'm not sure if 150 will do it. I feel like 175 will do it for sure.
I mean, I kind of like this bet of 100K. I mean,
oh yeah,
it really depends on if Adamo's going to fold the no backdoor ace queen or not, because obviously we're ahead of ace queen, but we would prefer him just to fold. That's our optimal outcome.
Oh, yeah, like super hard to play this hand. Yeah. Otherwise, but if we want him to fold, we're betting so small. It just makes it harder. Like, we might talk him into a call, even with the bad hands, like the ace queen offs and whatevers, because it's four blinds. And he does have a reasonable amount of chips in front of him, you know? So it's 50 blinds.
We might. I don't know. 125, 150. I like the idea of the small bet, because Adamo is obviously not folding a pocket pair if we go bigger. So I think we're just lighting money on fire by going bigger.
Agreed. We would never want to bet really big here.
Yeah.
Where the ranges are shrunk up pretty much to pocket pair. Adamo only has over pairs and hands like this, right? That's all.
Maybe he has some hands like king, queen suited, queen, jack suited. Maybe those are part of the range. It's hard to tell.
I don't think he's even probably. I would guess he might be folding even queen, jack suited. Although he's Michael Adamo and he likes to mix it up. Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's interesting. When the ranges get so tightened up, things get interesting, you know?
Yeah.
100K. I don't hate it. Maybe he needs to go 150. I imagine 150 is getting the no backdoor ace queens to fold.
Maybe you're right. I think I'd go 175, but whatever. This is one blind we're talking about.
I like the thought process behind the small bet, but maybe he went too small. It's possible.
I think he went too small. It's just going to be, makes it so much harder to play. Like, we need to fold out some shit right now. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. Anyway, Adamo does call with the ace queen of hearts on the old, where's the board? 4-4-5-8 with one heart and two diamonds. Yep. Wang Yi with the ace of spades, king of diamonds. So they both have backdoors. But, you know, Wang's is not as good. 785K in the pot. The turn is the nine of clubs. It is not a card that either player cares for. It's like a French-Canadian. Nope. It's a French-Canadian card.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry, right. French Canada. I'm sure some of our listeners are French Canadian. I apologize. Not really genuinely, but I will apologize. You know,
good enough.
I'll say the words.
What else? What else could a French Canadian want?
Of course.
Yeah, a pandering show of false humility.
And maybe a shower for once would help. You know, French Canadians. Anyway, going after them, you know?
Yeah,
Australia's taking enough hits. Australia has taken enough hits over the years on this show. We need to find a new target.
We did.
Italy was early on. We're done with them. It's pasta. You can't take shots at pasta.
It wasn't really Italy. It was Italians. It's totally different.
And mostly we meant Italian Americans, of course, which I am a quarter Italian, so I can say whatever I want. That's how it works. Anyway.
Yeah, not just about Italians, about anybody.
No, about anybody. Any subset of humanity. Open season for Grant. Nine of clubs on the turn.
Right, nine of clubs on the turn. Okay.
4-5-8-9, two diamonds. Nobody's hitting their back doors today.
See, this is the problem. This is the problem with betting 100K on the flop is, like, what the fuck do we do now where we feel like we kept in a lot of his stuff, but...
I think we could really go a couple ways. Obviously, checking and betting are the ways.
Great idea.
I don't hate a bet. I don't think we have to bet that big. We don't have to treat it like a cash game where we bet like full pot on the turn. We can take SPR as kind of an indication of how much we bet, and we can bet something like 400K, which is impactful enough that Adamo is going to fold a lot of his floats, including this one, almost certainly, right?
I mean, what do you do if you have two tens and the guy bets 400K here? I mean, it's not easy, right? We're going to successfully fold. I actually really like a bet here, especially because we only bet 100K on the flop. Okay, if Adamo has 9-9, all right, he's probably not going to fold. We block aces and kings. It's hard for him to have aces and kings anyway, in that he's going to, you know, 5-bet that or 4-bet that sometimes. Most of the time, probably, but at least sometimes. And we block it. Like, let's attack. Even the hands that are stronger in his range, it's hard for him to call down here as we're 3
off
the bubble.
He might do it anyway because he's Michael Adamo, and he's
But it's 150K event that probably affects him at least a little bit, right? Even Michael Adamo, that's super expensive, right?
Yeah, if there's a time to use your chip lead to bully Michael Adamo, it's on the bubble of a massive event.
Yeah,
so,
and we're not on the bubble, but we're close enough that he should be thinking stuff like, "Do I really want to put? I've got two jacks here. Do I really want to put in?" A sort of a committing amount of my stack where am I going to call the turn and fold the river if I get shoved on a brick, which is going to be a lot of cards. That doesn't sound good. Am I going to go call and just call it off here when I still have a lot of chips? I still have 50 blinds right now. That doesn't sound good either. I mean, that sounds better to me. Like, just fold and live to fight another day. You can't do that too often, but maybe we could talk ourselves into, we might fold out most of Adamo's range here. Now he's smart enough and GTO enough to know he can't fold everything, right? He's going to call the things. But since he can have some aces and kings, he can definitely have some queens here too. But not that much of those, really. But those are the hands he can call with, and he doesn't necessarily have to call with other stuff. I guess he could also have, like, nut flush draws sometimes, or diamonds to call with.
Yeah, he could.
But we have a diamond in our hand, so we know we block that. But from Adamo's point of view, he could be like, well, I have other things I can call with here that are, you know, the ace, queen of diamonds sometimes, or whatever, not just my jacks.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Beyond,
I like a bet.
Beyond the threat of his tournament, you're also threatening to take away his ability to abuse the bubble himself,
exactly.
Right? Like, if he loses a significant chunk but is still in the tournament, he's not going to be able to do what he's probably very used to doing on the bubble and just making everybody's life hell.
This is a really leveraged play to bet here, because you're saying to him, not like you're saying, like, you lose not just the chips in this hand, assuming you lose all those chips until the bubble bursts, which is probably going to be an hour or something like that. There's so many chips you don't get to get, because now you have to play defensively in your medium stack and we get to pick on you. It's a big deal.
Yeah. Anyway, he checks, which I understand why he checks. Yeah. He checks. Should Adamo now take a shot? The door is open.
I feel like we're supposed to bet here, right? Like, are we supposed to bet here?
Repping like tens or jacks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we're usually ahead. We're usually ahead, right? If we have tens or jacks, we would bet them most of the time.
I guess it really depends on our perception of Wang. Like, is he going to play over pairs this way, where he checks the turn sometimes? Like, with this SPR and the leverage situation, I kind of like check raising as a pretty common option on the turn from Wang's perspective.
I don't hate that either, but he's still going to have a lot of give ups here. And if we have tens or jacks and we bet and we get raised, we can fold and we can be like, well, I was going to call a bet on the river anyway if it was a brick, if it goes check, check on the turn with this hand. So that money is lost anyway. And that this way I get to deny equity to the other things, make this hand much more straightforward to play. Nothing weird can happen on the river where a diamond comes and now I don't know what to do because he bet. You know, there's like all these hard, or an ace comes and now he bets. Like, lots of bad things can happen. We get to avoid all that. Once in a while, I guess we can get bluffed, but not very often. Like, what bluffing hands are there here? Like, ace, king of diamonds, which has great equity against us anyway. Okay, that's a bluffing hand. Ace, queen of diamonds, maybe. But that's really it. Just a few diamond hands, you know?
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I'm surprised. He must think he has the best hand sometimes, right? Why else would he check back here?
It could be that. It could just be that he's like doing kind of a GTO thing where it's like, this is not one of the cards that I'm betting. You know, it's just like, I didn't.
Like, he's betting
it's
his
a nothing. It's a complete nothing card for me. So.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
And this is more, this is more GTO instead of exploitative. And maybe if you're up against good enough GTO players, you can't exploit them so well. Right?
Yeah.
It's hard to exploit them because they're being more balanced, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, and then 150K, wouldn't be surprising to be following GTO more.
Right. So he checks.
Okay.
So we've got 4, 5, 8, 9, Two diamonds on the board. Ace king for Wang, ace queen of hearts for Adamo. The river is the deuce of diamonds. So it's kind of a wet card, but not really for the way these guys have played the hand. It doesn't. Correct. It shouldn't affect their hands very much. Wang does have the king of diamonds blocker. I guess that's kind of nice, although as Wang, you would expect Adamo to have bet diamonds at some point. We'll get to that, though. So, deuce of diamonds. Wang thinks probably that he's behind, I would guess, right? At this point, he's got to think that Adamo has maybe a pair that he checked back the turn with. Or does he...
I mean, it's hard to come up with what pairs he's checking back, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't have a piece of the board. He doesn't have, like, 10-9 suited, I don't think. He's not putting in 250K, I don't think, with 10-9 suited.
No, I don't think so.
So he doesn't really have any nines or any of those pieces. So it'd just be a pocket pair. It's not going to be a pocket pair below nine. So it's like he had to check back tens plus for us to be losing. I don't know if that's happening very often. I think he's usually betting those. I think we think we're ahead when he checks. We're like, oh, you probably have a hand like he actually has, like ace queen. And you don't want to lose all your chips.
Well,
once in a while he has nines, I guess, but you know, whatever.
Well, Wang checks. He's just going to let Adamo make the decision for everybody about what happens on this river. What should that decision be once Wang checks? Adamo's sitting there with ace-queen. Do you feel like you're ever good? Do you feel like...
No.
Like, no, it doesn't feel... Does it feel like Wang has exactly ace-king? It kind of does, right? Like,
I think when he doesn't have ace-king, he has a few pips up from it, like ace... whatever isn't a straight there. Ace-5, ace-4, ace-3. One of those is a straight, but the other ones aren't.
So ace-5 and ace-4 are pairs. And ace three is a straight.
So like the suited version, you know, those are typical squeezing three betting type bluffy hands, right? Which made a pair, so they bet tiny on the flop. Now they're checking because they're in showdown mode on the turn, and they check again on the river because they don't want to put any more money in. So it's like ace king or one of those hands, I think, almost always.
You'd think if it were jacks plus, which seem like typical three betting hands, that Wang would have bet the turn or the river.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Certainly the river he's going to bet.
Yeah.
You'd be like, how am I not? If I'm not winning with jacks, I'm going to check call anyway, right? On this board, I'm check calling. So like I can set a price for myself. I can bet in a way to try and get some of his range to actually call the worst parts of his range to call that are potentially calling hands instead of, you know, so it'll cost me less when I'm behind and I'll make more chips when I'm ahead by betting.
Yeah.
I think he's betting those hands. Yeah.
So as Adamo, we believe we're behind. But we believe that Wang's range is relatively weak, despite us being behind. So the next piece of it is, obviously, in order to win the hand, we need to bluff. But should we? Should we bluff? Like, and there's a lot that goes into that. One is, who is our opponent and how does he think about poker? Because if we bluff, and this has kind of been implicit in some of the discussion we've already had, it's not a great story by Adamo. He's not telling an amazing story at this point if he bluffs.
Yeah. Terrible story, especially on the deuce of diamonds, where we didn't bet the turn, where we usually, as you said, we almost certainly would have heard from diamonds by now most of the time. Not 100% of the time, but most of the time, right?
Right.
Like, if Adamo had ace-queen of diamonds, I think he's betting the turn, right? He's not just going to let this humongous pot, there's 700,000 in the pot, just sitting there. He's going to take a shot at that. Right. Most of the time, it's like, oh, yeah, you have ace king a lot. And when you don't, I have equity. Of course, I'm moving in here or effectively moving in. Right.
He's either betting the turn or raising the flop most of the time.
Right. Right. And he might raise the flop sometimes, but he might choose to just call because of the bubble and because of the, you know, this, where you figure like all the overpairs are calling, especially when it's the chip leader. And so he's got, you can't threaten his life or anything like that. Right. So that deuce of diamonds is a tough, tough sell. Adamo doesn't have any straights. He has very few flushes. Overpair should have bet the turn. The story is very bad. But can we win anyway? Sometimes you can win anyway, and the story doesn't matter. It's 150K. Maybe that makes it harder. But I don't really know who this guy is. And maybe he'll just talk himself into a fold. Maybe we do check back jacks once in a while. I'm sure we do once in a while. And kings and aces, even on the turn, right? And so we're like, ha-ha, gotcha. Now I get to bet.
It's just so opponent dependent, and unfortunately, you and I know nothing about Wang Yi. But like, there are definitely players that I will bet in a spot like this against, where I'm like, this guy has no idea what's going on. It doesn't matter. Like, he's just gonna fold this slightly superior hand to this bet, even though my story is complete garbage. It's It's a horrible story, and I would never tell this story against a good player. If the guy I was playing against was the guy sitting next to him, I would never make this bet because that guy's good, you know. But so you have to know what you're dealing with here. So if Adamo has no respect for Wang, then he should bet. And if he thinks that Wang is good, then he should check.
I mean, Adamo also has made a living telling weird stories, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, he bets four times the pot when some super strange thing, the board goes weird in some way, and he gets a lot of calls and a lot of folds, but a lot of calls where he has a hand and gets to get, you know, he stacks people in weird ways that you wouldn't expect because the stories are weird. So maybe he actually feels he has a little more leeway to tell a weird story or a bad story because he does show up with stuff that other people don't put him on. It feels hard to do in this hand, though, because of the 250K three bet and Adamo's stack size and the fact we're three off the bubble.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we can actually tell that story in any way convincing, even though we may tell weird stories sometimes that where we actually have it. It's hard for us to have it. It's really hard for us to have it. But maybe, it you is. Know, the other thing is this. Sometimes you tell a bad story. The player knows you're telling a bad story. They're good enough to know that you're telling a bad story, but they still fold. That happens too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can think of a guy who's really good, who I tell stories against sometimes that are pretty bad, and he looks at me, and he has this look in his face, and he pains him, and then he folds his hand a lot. And it's like, okay. Cool. So it may be Adamo's just like, let's trip the light fantastic, baby. Sorry. Let's trip the light fantastic, baby. There you go. That's Australian.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. So Adamo goes for it. He bets 550K. And
it's a 700? A little more. 800.
785.
Okay.
So if I were in Wang's seat, I would be thinking all of the things that we thought, like, okay, I guess I'm supposed to call, but then it would cross my mind, like, okay, but it is Michael Adamo. Doesn't he know it's a bad story? Doesn't he know? Like, so should I fold then? he knows what he's doing.
Does that mean we're only calling when it's a good story? I mean, we have to call sometimes, right?
Yeah.
So that's, we'd rather call against a bad story than a good story most of the time, right?
And I think I've already come to the conclusion that this has to be a call because any hand with a diamond in it is better than any hand without a diamond in it, just in case. So having a four or five doesn't really help us that much, unless Adamo's doing this with ace-king. But Adamo's usually going to get it in preflop with ace-king, I would think. Usually.
I think so, too. I think he'd be pretty excited to put in the four bet with ace-king.
So it just doesn't feel like he has a pair. If we block flushes in case he's playing tricky with a flush draw, it feels like we have to call with this hand. It kind of does.
Yeah. And by the way, if Adamo has ace king, that's okay anyway. We get our chips.
Yeah, we get it's
a
good call.
I mean, we're making chips because all that money in the pot, we get half of it.
Yeah.
It feels like we have to call because the story is so absurd. It's so hard to come up with anything. And I would be concerned about it. Like, is he going to turn over like freaking two eights here and just have owned me in every which way? Is that about to happen? That's going to really suck. Or like, you know, 10-9 of hearts. Somehow, and like, I don't even understand how he's in this hand and then calls the, I guess I see how he checks back the turn and bets the river. I could maybe talk myself into that, but the deuce of diamonds comes, that doesn't scare him at all. I don't know. You know, there's another option we have as Wang. Not really, I guess. Adamo doesn't have enough chips for us to consider bluffing here, right?
No, maybe if we had the ace of diamonds, but it's a little bit risky without the nut blocker too.
Neither of us really have any credible nut flushes, though. Like, we don't, because we can't really check the turn because we could get moved in on effectively on the turn where we're not even really getting the odds to call with like two overs in the nut flush draw, which is absurd when we can just bet ourselves and set it all up perfectly, right? And Adamo similarly can't really have it either for the same reasons, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe the King of Diamonds blocker isn't that important, really. It's a little bit important because Adamo plays hands weird, so we get to block some of the weirdness.
Right.
But I think we have to call, and I think the diamond makes it a little easier to do it, but I think we have to call.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that's what Wang does. He calls. He wins.
Good for him. Good for him.
Yeah.
It was a good call.
I know that we like broke it down to the point where it feels like you have to, but still, that's a tough fucking call to make.
In the moment, in 150K, and you're not like Sam Greenwood, you know, you know, also, like, if you're not used to being on these streams so much, you don't want to look dumb. where you call with ace high and like give up all this big chip lead to the great player, you know. But this guy's past all that, and I'm happy. This is a good call.
Good for him. He goes on to get seventh in the tournament for basically what is now half of his Hendon, over 700K. Adamo gets 10th, so Adamo still has a relatively good run, but doesn't win the tournament.
That's too bad. So if Adamo bets the turn, he just wins, right?
I think so. Yeah,
because now he can have all the overpairs. He can have jacks and tens and even queens. And even kings and aces a little bit, right?
And diamonds.
He can have everything, right? He didn't keep his options open. He didn't Sean Winter it, and he paid
did
the
not
price.
Sean Winter it.
Even a small bet, he could tell the story, right? He could bet 200 on the turn.
Yeah.
And then bluff the river when the diamond comes, and it's like, well, guess who can have diamonds and who can't, buddy? Only me. I'm the only guy. And overpairs. And by the way, even if I have an overpair, I can bet the river because you don't have diamonds. You would never play diamonds like this, right? So I can tell a really good story here.
This was what you always said about Adamo, right? Like, if you just play, you know, this is always your thing against like players like Adamo and Bryn Kenny. You just call. You just have to call them.
Yes. Yeah. You just got to call more.
Yeah.
You just got to suck it up and call. Hands you really want to fold, your heart is telling you to fold. You have to really make sure you need to fold that hand because you have to call more against these guys. You know, Mike McDonald said back in the day when he went on his big run, this is a long time ago now, but he won like two EPTs or something in a short period of time, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Or maybe not two. He won one and he finished like final table with another one. He had a big run where he had a bunch of seven-figure scores, whatever. And someone said, what are you doing differently? And he said, I'm calling more.
Hmm.
I was like, yeah. You know, well,
that could have been a product of the era. That was probably like 2011 or 2012 or something. Everybody was super bluffy.
No question. But who is the most successful version of that era right now? It might be Adamo, right? Adamo can be super bluffy, right? Like a lot of players would never take this line that he just took and never go for it on the river, especially good players aren't going to go for it on the river here because they know it's such a bad story. And Adamo's like, hey, bloody hell, mate, I can get it through.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
He said that.
That
actually
wasn't
the problem.
Adamo. Yeah.
The problem was that he said that out loud. That was not a good idea.
Yeah. And to be clear, that wasn't us taking a clip of him saying that. I know you probably thought that was these guys are really upping their tech game here. No, that was just me. That was me doing my Adamo impression.
That was very good Adamo.